grab your pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned, because we're gonna gather, and we're gonna march, and we're gonna blow its fucking house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing, dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. Today is New Year's Eve. It is a day when a lot of people are thinking about transformation and the end of the old and the start of the new, the promise of the blank page before them, not to get all Natasha Bedingfield on you. I don't have an interview for you today. I had a round table that I was going to present to you, but there have been a few things that have been resting on my spirit, as my mom might say, that I felt were important to talk about. You may have noticed that today's episode is called Inciting a Final Riot, and there is a reason for that. Today is going to be the last episode of Inciting a Riot, the podcast. And that is a heavy thing to say. I have been doing this podcast since 2009. And because of this podcast, I have grown as a person, as an ally, as a spiritual person, as a partner, as a husband, as a friend. I have the friends that I have because of this show. I have been made better in so many ways because of Inciting a Riot. But I also have to recognize that when I began this show, I was a kid. I was still in college, and I was from a very sheltered upbringing. And I came at this, I created Inciting a Riot, first the blog, and then a few months later, the podcast. I created it just sort of as a place to kind of scream anonymously into the void of the internet, back way before social media, back before the most online you could be was starting a personal blog. And even then, you know, the most you could really hope to have on average would be a few hundred readers at the most. You know, I never really thought that anybody would be paying attention to what I wrote or what I said. Especially when I started my podcast, it wasn't quite a personal blog, but it was, I had no perspective. I had no scope. I had no forethought. I just thought I was participating in online discourse. I thought this was where the pagan community was, and I wanted to be a part of it. So I did. I was a part of it. I've been a part of it for a long time now, for a very, very long time. And because of Inciting a Riot, I helped organize and found the Pagan Podkin Supermoot, which was, for several years, it was a meetup that went around the United States where podcasters gathered. And you know, we met up with listeners and gave classes and toured and did some cool stuff, and that was really neat. I have made friends that I never thought that I would never have had a chance to meet otherwise. I have talked to people who change the world, who are actively doing amazing things. And I've grown up. And as angry and as pointed as I was filled when I started the riot, I was filled with this great, deep sense of injustice and unfairness and a focus on saying the quiet part out loud and going there and pointing fingers and digging into the shadows and pulling out the squirming, crawling mess that sits there, bringing it into the light and forcing us all to look at it. I was tired of people not addressing real issues and instead choosing to focus on the bright, shiny, sparkly bits of our community. And so I covered topics on this show that nobody else would cover. And I said things on this show that nobody else would say. And I wrote things on my blog that nobody else would write. And slowly, over the years, more voices have started saying these things. More people are less afraid of saying the quiet part out loud. I don't take credit for that. I just acknowledge that my singular voice, my singular perspective is no longer as necessary to the community as I think it once was, which to say it was ever necessary is, I realize, quite the statement, quite the bravado, but if you'll allow me, it's my show and it's going to be the last one. So I'm reflective. It is going to be the last episode of Inciting a Riot because the energy of Inciting a Riot is one of anger and rage and finger pointing and pointed statements and broad brush painting and shoot from the hip mentality. As much as I like to think that I bring an air of caution and neutrality and consideration for all sides of an issue and context and nuance and deep dives into subjects and hoping that I present you all good research and important voices, I still have to acknowledge the fact that Inciting a Riot, just the words themselves, gosh, they're so filled with anger. They're so filled with an energy that no longer suits me. I'm 35, and I will be turning 36 this year. And when I sort of re-kickstarted my podcast back in 2019, I'm going to be really honest. My original intention was, it was the 10th anniversary of the show. I wanted to kind of go out with a bang. And then people started tuning in again. And listenership grew. And suddenly, in the last year and a half, 2 years, my presence online has exploded to a level that I never thought it would be. I mean, yes, I very much realize that there are people that have far larger social media platforms than I do. But let me tell you, 13 years ago, me would have just been blown away by the fact that there's 40,000 followers on this platform and, 10,000 followers on this platform and, this many thousands of subscribers and this, there's, young me would be proud and scared and baffled and confused and excited and weirded the fuck out by what this show has become. And I'm very, very proud of that. I'm very, very proud of the work that I've done on this show, even the bad stuff, because I learned from it. I grew up right in front of all of you. I made terrible mistakes in front of all of you. I going back and listening to old episodes along with my Patreon supporters this past year is so weird, because listening to that first year of shows, I mean, you know, the world was so different. And I think I forgot. I never considered that I would ever get to marry my husband. I truly did not think that was ever going to happen. I definitely never thought I would publish a book. Never. And despite the gossip that has happened about me and my book, I truly never thought that anything that I would ever have to say would have been important enough to get published or sought after enough for you all to go out to bookstores and purchase it and take it home and read it and review it and tell your friends about it and post about it on social media. This is wild. But today is still going to be the last episode of Inciting a Riot. Because the energy of Inciting a Riot no longer serves me. Nor, for that matter, does Firelight. I know. Might have been a wake-up call to have, I don't know, a year ago before I put a book out with that name on it. But I have done a lot of thinking and soul searching, and I realized that there is a version of myself that I have been presenting online that feels authentic to a point. Firelight, as a name, an entity, a character, is that. It's a character that I have played for 13 years. Firelight is bolder than I am in real life. Firelight is more pointed than I am in real life. Firelight is... You know, in the movie You've Got Mail, Meg Ryan's character tells Tom Hanks, I wish I were the kind of person that knew what to say when someone says something nasty to me. This, I'm paraphrasing here, but she's telling Tom Hanks that she kind of wishes that she always had the, you know, the witty retort. She wished she could put somebody in their spot. Firelight was a persona that I took on so that I could write with some level of anonymity and safety. That I could create this podcast with a level of anonymity and safety. But at the same time, it became like another persona that I put on. And the more and more that I inhabited Firelight online, on social media, when I'm giving an interview, when I'm in a talk with someone, the more that it truly felt like a different persona. Because Firelight always has the witty retort. Only later do I realize, that, maybe that wasn't a thing that needed to be said. Maybe you could have just let that go. And it's because of that that Firelight no longer serves me either. I am ready to present an authentic version of myself online, on social media, and on this podcast. So because of that, as I said, this is the last episode of Inciting a Riot. But this is not the last episode of this podcast. I'm going to do something that I haven't done in years. I'm going to take a little break. I'm going to take the month of January off. And when I come back, we're going to retitle this show. I haven't quite landed on the name yet, but it is going to be hosted by me. By me, my real self. But before we get to more of that, it is the last episode of the year. And as is tradition, I think that on the last episode of the year, it would be appropriate to talk about some of the things that I hope that we leave behind in 2021. Like I'm leaving behind a mask, a persona, and the riot. There's a few things that I would like us as a group to reconsider whether or not they serve us going forward as a community. Maybe not even as a community, you as the individual listener, I would like for us to reconsider a few things together. The first one is your interaction with influencers, content creators, whatever you want to call them, the people on the internet that have larger than normal social media followings, who present to you a combination of information and entertainment and monetized YouTube videos and TikToks and all of the stuff. I don't want anyone to discount that group, of which many people could say that I'm certainly a part of. But I would like us all to practice a bit more discernment when it comes to taking in what these folks have to say. I talked about in my book, The Dabbler's Guide to Witchcraft, the notion of letting experts be experts. And I try to go into great detail and have done so on this show in the past and in my book and in my writing and online presence. The idea that we have a lot of books and videos and content that brushes up against legitimate areas of expertise, crystals and herbs and medicine and psychology. We've talked earlier this year to a woman who makes shadow work her living, but her actual real live it. She's an actual counselor, has gone to actual school for it, and is not just somebody that, you know, hangs her tile out there and says that she can, you know, do witchy shadow work on you and you can get rid of your shadow work. Because those things come from real places. We butt up against areas of expertise and occasionally infringe on places in that area of expertise. Maybe we shouldn't go. We medicalize our discussions of crystals and plants and things like that. We talk about healing. We get into areas of mental health that very few of us have any right to talk about on the internet, except by sharing our own perspective. We have folks that try to diagnose other folks. We have folks that try to, you know, talk about mental health or physical health or how to make healing potions and this and that and the other. Never taking into account, as the consumer of that information, whether or not that person has any expertise on the matter. If somebody's going to tell you to drink something to cure an actual physical ailment, that's a big deal. That's medicalizing your spiritual practice. And I'm not saying that there's no place for traditional spiritual remedies. What I'm saying is that I hope that we practice a bit more discernment going forward. Vet the information that we consume before we drink that tea or put that crystal in our water bottle. As witchcraft waxes and wanes in popularity, we're certainly on a waxing a waxing schedule the last few years, it seems like. It's been trending upward in popularity. As it becomes more popular in this era of sharing absolutely everything on social media and the ways in which virality seems to confer legitimacy. You know, somebody makes a few videos and they go viral and they sort of fall backwards into this massive following. Suddenly it seems like we should be listening to them more. Oh, well, they've got a lot of followers. They must know things. They must have more knowledge than I do. And something that I've tried to express to you all time and time and time again is that just because I'm the one behind this microphone doesn't mean that I know more than you do. I'm just the person that decided to start a show. You know, just because I wrote a book doesn't mean that I necessarily know more than you do. It just means that I had a perspective and an idea that a publisher was willing to buy. And that's the thing, isn't it? You know, love or hate the notion of influencers. They are indeed influencing you. They're influencing what is published, how it's marketed, to whom it's being consumed. Thorne Mooney and I talked about that earlier this year. The fact that sort of a combination of people creating trends, you know, influencers, and publishers buying up books based on those trends creates a kind of conversation that we don't even realize we're participating in. You know, why are there so many books on green witchcraft? Isn't it just amazing, to borrow Thorne's words? Isn't it just amazing? Isn't it just an interesting coincidence that so many people think of themselves as green witches? And oh, look, there's books called Green Witchcraft that you can go buy. Oh, there's the Kitchen Witch's Guide to X, Y, or Z. There's the Modern Witch's Guide to X, Y, or Z. Those trending topics, those keywords, those thoughts and ideas are just part of an algorithm. They're just part of the algorithmic soup that gets a lot of clicks, gets a lot of search engine optimization. It leads to a false feeling that we are ready to be teachers because we've worked that algorithm for all it's worth and we've gained ourselves a little bit of a following. The thing is, I want you to be more discerning when it comes to these influencers, because there is this parasocial false intimacy between us and the folks online. You know, somebody with 100,000 followers or a million followers or whoever. You think that because that person is filming videos in their bedroom, or they're taking you along on a grocery trip, or occasionally they share a photo of themselves without makeup, or, you know, you see me without my shirt on. You think that you know that person. You think that you have an idea of who they are when they're not being their internet self. Or you think that their internet self is them. But more than that, so much exposure to those people gives you this false intimacy, this parasocial relationship. It gives us the feeling that we are taking advice from trusted friends rather than a stranger on the internet who doesn't know much more about a topic usually than you do, who very often just found this topic a few weeks, maybe months ago at best. You know, maybe the last year or two. I mean, you know, if I'm in my early 20s and I'm making content, I can't have been doing this for very long, right? And I know from what I speak, because that's how I started too. I was in my early 20s making content for the internet. We just didn't have social media as big as it was back then. And I sure did think that I knew what I was talking about. But you know what I was not ready for at the time? Being a teacher. I wasn't even really ready to be a leader. I mentioned this before this year on social media, that there is a difference between leaders and teachers, and there should be. These days, I would argue that if you have a large enough social media following, that automatically makes you a leader. People are following you for a reason. There is something about the way that you present information that people want to follow, that people want to consume what you say. And there's a big responsibility with that. In the last few years, the way that I have met that is by using my platform to point the spotlight elsewhere, to try to highlight voices that I think are walking the walk, talking the talk, making the change. Some folks like to make it all about them, and I get that. I truly get that, because, you know, it's my following. It's my voice. People are following me, right? I did that for a long time, for 10 years. But the thing is, just because you have a large following doesn't necessarily mean that you're ready to teach, that you're ready to educate others. You know, gosh, I started the show in 2009, and it hit a really high point by 2011 that continued on an upward trajectory until 2016, at which point I was getting 10,000 downloads an episode for the first week of the podcast, and then it would continue on from there. I mean, I had pretty massive listener following, especially for the day back then. Other people had more than me, sure, but I'd still, to this day, do not have as many people listening to this show as listened to me back then. Not even with all of my many followers on social media, no. And the thing is, at the time, I thought that, you know, I had a college degree, I was a smart guy, and I knew how to do research, and I thought that if I saw something that I didn't understand, or if I had a good idea, or if I read something in a book, I thought that I had enough knowledge about that to then go educate others. And honestly, I'm a little shocked that I didn't try to write a book before. I really am. Because boy, howdy, did I think that I was ready to tell everybody. I thought that I was ready to tell everybody how they were doing it wrong, or, you know, what the right way to do something was, or whatever. And I was so wrong. Oh my gosh, I was so wrong. And I was so wrong because I might have had some knowledge, but I didn't have any perspective whatsoever. I had not lived enough life. I had not talked to enough people. And there is a difference between a leader and a teacher, because a teacher has enough perspective on life, has enough expertise that they can pass that on to you because they've lived it, they've learned it, they've internalized it, they've walked that walk in the world for enough time that they are now ready to pass that information on to you. They can help guide you and correct you. Not all teachers are ready to be leaders. Some teachers are ready to take on one or two people at a time, and that's fine. We need those people too. They make our community run. They make communities in general run. Mentors, teachers, folks who know more than us, who are graciously allowing us to learn from them. But don't confuse a follower count with expertise. Don't confuse a follower count with a teacher. Because so much of the reason why some people have these massive follower counts is because they are set up in life already. They are supported financially by wealthy, very wealthy family that supports them so that they don't have to work, so they can create content for you. They have immense levels of privilege. And I don't think that we talk about that enough. Why are the voices that we see most often, why are the people with the largest followings, the folks with the largest followings? Many times it is because they have the time and space and financial support to create content full-time. Or mostly full-time. There is a level of privilege that we don't talk about enough in this community. And as witchcraft, as paganism, as the occult becomes more and more popular these days, folks with more and more privilege find the community. And they study a bit, and then they hop online, and they use their money and privilege to gain a following. Sometimes they outright buy one. Sometimes large follower numbers are literally purchased. So don't confuse, stop confusing a follower count with expertise. Because it's not. It's not. Something else that I would like us to leave behind in 2021 that I know is a pipe dream are Barnum statements. But, you know, the easiest example these days is scrolling through social media and finding somebody, you know, in a little TikTok video or a little, you know, reel or something, or they're shuffling their card, their tarot cards, and they pull a card out and they don't show it to you. And they say something like, you know, oh, how's those attachment issues going? Well, everybody feels like they have attachment issues. What attachment issues? To whom? About what? But Barnum statements, these generic statements that feel like they apply to absolutely everybody, are a great way to make the algorithm happy, to increase your engagement, to get people commenting down below. Oh my gosh. Oh, this was for me. Oh, absolutely. Oh gosh, it's like you know me. And then if you get a large enough number of those commenters and followers, then you can start selling psychic services that are filled with Barnum statements as well, in emails or in recorded conversations, where you can just rehash the same generic statements over and over again without ever actually having to be an expert in tarot reading and astrology and numerology. If you're good enough at Barnum statements and cold reading, you can make a pretty decent living as a psychic. And the problem with that is that we've seen this year that there are so many people taking advantage of that. Hundreds of millions of dollars. I think I saw one figure that was in the billions now of dollars lost in the last couple of years to psychic scammers who are literally trying to scam you out of their money. It's not just impersonators. It's not just people trying to impersonate someone like Robin Valentine on Instagram and try to solicit psychic readings that are filled, of course, with Barnum statements. But it's also people that set themselves up, that cloak themselves in the shroud of legitimacy. Or sometimes, unfortunately, it's people that think that they're participating in the culture of, you know, because they see everyone else doing it. They see everyone else hanging their tile out there to sell tarot services or astrology services or numerology services or whatever. And they think, well, I want to do that too. I can do that. I'll charge $5, $10, whatever. Because they think, you know, they want to participate. I get that. I made a podcast because I wanted to participate too. And they don't realize that they are not actually an expert yet. They are not actually, they are not ready to do that kind of thing. There's levels of harm. There's people that are intentionally scamming you out of your money. There's people who are cloaking themselves in legitimacy and selling you garbage. And then there's people that don't even realize that they're causing harm. They just wanted to participate. They weren't trained, they weren't taught, they learned some tricks from a book and see a lot of their favorite influencers giving these Barnum statement-filled readings on TikTok and YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and they think that those captions or those videos or those tweets represent authentic spiritual services, that that is how that would happen, that's how that conversation would happen in person. So they cop those techniques and try to sell you these services. And then a lot of people get scammed out of a lot of money or time or energy. So I know that we're not going to leave Barnum statements in the past because they have been a part of culture for a very long time. They're literally taught into you. They're literally taught to people that are in positions like sales or, you know, something like that, where, you know, you're trained to say things in such a way that it feels personal and intimate, where it's actually something that could apply to most people. That's trained into you in a lot of jobs, in a lot of client-facing jobs. It's soft skills. But when used for the wrong thing, and in certain circumstances, it presents itself as cold reading techniques. It presents itself as an easy way for a scammer to take advantage of you. Instead of doing the work to actually learn tarot, to actually learn astrology, numerology, or whatever. Because the folks that are actual experts tend not to flash those skills a lot on the internet. They might tell you about themselves, they might offer themselves, but they're not making those silly videos. They're not filling their social media feeds with Barnum statements because they're the real deal. They have a learned skill that has taken them years to master. Something else I'd like us to leave behind is the notion of cancel culture. Mostly because these days, one, cancel culture is not a thing. I think we should probably get that out of the way. Most of the people who have been canceled, you know, the really high profile folks, they all have like Netflix specials now. Didn't Louis C.K. just put out a comedy special after he was just canceled like 5 minutes ago because of decades of sexual abuse? But he's got a comedy special that just came out. Kevin Hart has shows on Netflix and successful podcasts and all sorts of, he's still got a career. And that guy's one of the most homophobic people on the planet, has literally threatened to kill his children if they came home and said that they were gay. Nothing happens to them. And yet we still participate in cancel culture by like dogpiling on to people based typically on a barely understood one-off moment or a resurfaced statement from years ago that oftentimes has already been dealt with publicly years ago. And that person has apologized and done the work and grown from it. Taking something out of context or dogpiling onto someone doesn't fix things. There are people who are truly terrible. And I mean, truly, truly terrible. But we don't seem to be focusing on those people. Instead, we want to take people down if they slip up. Oh, they're too pretty. Oh, they're too successful. I don't know, I just want to knock them down a peg. It's funny because people will pile on to a cancellation dog pile who don't even know the person, who aren't even invested at all, but it's just fun. It's just fun. It's now like a new form of entertainment that ends in like people fearing for their safety. And then the internet just continually dredges up old tweets or old statements or something that the person has already, and it's just a constant, incessant throwing of stones. And I just have to wonder, is the purpose to just run these people off of, I mean, just to end someone's life? Or is it to truly teach them that what they did was not okay? And encourage them to grow and learn and to be better and to then use their power and privilege and position and platform, if they have one, to then be a better ally, to then be a better example to their followers of how to do the right thing after having done the real actual work to internally unpack their harm and their internalized prejudice that led them there? Or is the point just to throw stones because it's fun? It's fun for the target to be someone else because we hate our jobs or somebody said something mean to us on the bus or we were late or our coffee spilled on us or whatever it is and we're having a shitty day and oh look, there's someone that we can throw a stone at. Practice discernment. Practice discernment. Learn the why behind the what. Why are you mad? Why are you mad? Remember, all of social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, all of it. It all thrives on engagement. And the one thing that we know for sure drives engagement is outrage. Outrage drives engagement more than anything else. And almost every single social media site, most of them owned by Facebook or Meta or whatever we're calling it now, their algorithms are literally geared to keeping you as outraged and engaged and invested as possible. And that's WhatsApp, that's Instagram, that's Facebook. Twitter and TikTok and YouTube are not far behind. They all have algorithms and they all want to keep you engaged. And the thing that keeps everybody engaged is outrage, anger, fear, paranoia. So before the internet tells you to be mad at someone, figure out why. And are you the person to be mad at them? Do you have a right to that anger? All of that leads me to one final thing. The notion of doing your own research. People should be prepared to do their own research. In areas of spirituality, like our community, it's difficult to not be required to kind of do your own research. But the problem is that we throw out the words, do your own research, and there's really no guidebook for that. There's no direction. There's no path. There's no compass. There's no direction on what do you mean? How do I do this? What does good research look like? Well, I don't know. I didn't know that that book that I read was problematic because of some conversation that happened 7 years ago that I didn't know about because I'm just coming to the internet now. Doing your own research is a two-edged sword. As we've seen with this coronavirus pandemic, with COVID-19, people think they're doing their own research and all it is memes on Facebook. Outrage-filled YouTube and TikTok videos that are created by bad faith actors who do not know what they are talking about, but just want to keep you in a state of outrage and fear and paranoia. Because one, that drives engagement. Two, that makes them money. And three, that feeds their ego by increasing their follower count. But it happens in benign settings as well. Our community does the same thing. Do your own research. Do your own research. Remember, leaders may not be ready to be teachers, and that's okay. But perhaps we should gatekeep the position of teacher just a little bit more. Not everybody's ready to be a teacher. And it's okay if you recognize that you got a big following, but maybe you're just not ready to be a teacher. Maybe you're not ready to take on that position. Because you're still figuring out yourself. You're still figuring out your own path. By the same token, teachers are not necessarily oftentimes the right people to lead. Leadership, commanding a room, driving conversation, that takes a whole different level set of skills. But the notion of doing your own research is a two-edged sword. And one that's really difficult to do in most scenarios, because we are not experts, each of us. And we don't all have access to the same set of information. So telling someone to go do their own research in an area where they don't have enough time, they don't, you know, the resources that they already trust are skewed, but they want to go do their research, so they try, you know. A lot of us run into trouble on the internet by sharing an opinion because we thought we did our own research, and oh boy howdy, there's a whole set of information that we didn't know or consider because we're not experts. We don't know. We're trying. Practice discernment. In 2022. And when you do your own research, vet that information. If you get information from the internet, go verify it in several places before you take it as true. There's a lot of voices out there that present themselves as experts, that are trying to teach you, that trying to feed you information. Not all of them have your best interests in mind, and not all of those people, even if they do have their best your best interests in mind, not all of those people know exactly what they're talking about. Some are too new to the information to have enough perspective to realize that their take on the subject isn't necessarily accurate. Some people have opinions based on outdated or flat-out wrong information because they did their own research and didn't get it from good sources. So the phrase, do your own research, do your own research. Let's do away with that. Instead of telling me your opinion, tell me where you got it. Where'd you read that? What news article did you get that information from? You have this opinion, but why? Where'd that come from? Interrogate the why. Why are you saying that? Why are you allowing that to get through your personal filter and to influence the way that you think and believe and act in this world? Don't just tell someone to do your own research. Provide them sources. And the thing is, in that providing of sources, be ready to have those sources themselves interrogated. If you're asking for information on crystals and you get some article from, I don't know, Super Karma Magic Crystals with a Z dot whatever, dot truth, interrogate that source a little bit. Have you ever heard of it? Just because you haven't heard of it doesn't mean it's not a legit source. Who wrote it? Can you find out more information about that person? Finding out more information about who is giving you information is just, we are not talking about that enough. As witchcraft becomes more and more popular, and as publishers want to cash in on the trend, there are so many books that are on offer and boosted in the algorithm by publishing houses that are creating books, sometimes written by literal algorithms, literal AI writing half the book or the outline. And then when you go to look the author up, you realize that's not a real person. It's not a real person. That name doesn't represent an authentic individual who had these thoughts. It might represent a team of people. There are so many books on bestseller lists in nonfiction categories, especially in witchy categories, that are written by algorithms or written by AI or written by people who are not actually the people that they say they are. Vet your sources. Don't just, you know, this notion of doing your own research, interrogate the sources themselves. Interrogate the information. Double check, triple check. This year has been wild, y'all. This year has been wild. I put out a book with Simon and Schuster. I never, ever thought that that was going to happen, ever. And you all like it. I really never thought that would happen. And in a lot of ways, because of that success and because there are more people listening than have listened to me ever. There are more people consuming my content than have consumed it ever. There, you know, there's future publishing deals and there's all sorts of things. And in a lot of ways, it feels like, oh, I should continue. I should just keep going. But I cannot shake the feeling that this just doesn't serve me anymore. This energy, this anger, this pointed nature of interrogating our spiritual community. It doesn't serve me anymore. So, that's how we're going to leave 2021. I'm going to bury Firelight and the Inciting a Riot podcast, and I'm going to take about a month off. And when I come back, there will be a new name. You don't have to, there's not going to be a new feed. We're going to change the name. If you have any name ideas, let me know. I'm not actually going away. And I'm going to be me. Because there is a version of myself that I have presented through the Inciting a Riot, through the Firelight social media, that keeps everybody at just a little bit of an arm's length. And there's a reason for that. And the thing is, just because I'm sort of, I guess, coming out of the broom closet a bit, doesn't necessarily mean that there won't still be some distance. But I'm tired of trying to fit who I am into this box of content. Oh, you know what? I haven't done an episode with a witchy author in a while. Oh, I better schedule one of those. I'm an artist and a poet and a damn good writer, and I like to work out, and I live on a horse ranch, and I like Pokemon. I mean, I am so many more things than Firelight allows me to be. And so I'm hoping that in 2022, I can reintroduce myself as myself. So stay tuned. I hope. I realize it's been a weird conversation, and this lasted a lot longer than I thought it was going to, but I guess I had a lot more to say. And in a lot of ways, I want to keep talking because I don't want it to end. I'm a little scared that if I change things, that it all goes away. That if I open myself up and show you all my authentic self, y'all won't want that version of me. But I'm too old for a mask anymore. It feels like a game, and I don't want to play a game anymore. So I'm hoping to talk about things that I'm passionate about and not worry about fitting into a narrow scope of this podcast needing to be specifically towards a pagan audience at all times. As I've said many times in the book and on the show, we are our whole selves at all times. The people coming to this path, to this community these days, are wanting a version of spirituality that looks like them, that looks like their lives. And when I wrote those words in my book, I thought, well, shit. I'm not even living as myself on my own podcast. Firelight's not me. Firelight is a version of me. It's like the Snapchat filter version of me. But you all let him into your ears, into your speakers for 13 years. And it feels weird to say goodbye. But it also feels right. It feels right. Because I am so proud of the conversations that I'm having, and I'm so proud of the work that I'm doing. But I want to do it as myself. I want to do it as myself. So, hi. My name's Don. And it's been the privilege of a lifetime hosting this podcast. And I hope, as I evolve and I bring all the little pieces of myself together, and start off on a newer, more authentic journey, I hope you'll come with me. I hope you'll stick around, because I have such big plans, and I am so excited to get to do them and to try. It's been a tough year, and it's time to put things behind us that no longer serve us. So for me, it is the mask of firelight and the name inciting a riot. Happy New Year. I'll see you all in a month. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but for the last time, I'm going to leave you. I'm going to leave you. But as always, I will leave you with love and light, firelight.